in 1975, Jaws was released. It is routinely regarded as one of the greatest films of all time and is generally credited with creating the concept of the summer blockbuster. In 1978, in an obvious cash grab, Jaws 2 was released, failing to have lightning strike a second time, but presenting a generally enjoyable film. In 1983, Jaws 3D was released, shamelessly attempting to take advantage of a gullible audience. By 1987, there was no pretense of quality as Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine cashed paychecks for sleepwalking through a pointless and incredulous sequel. In 2016, Paul Spitero created Is It Jaws, in which he and a group of rotating guest hosts discuss new and old movies and place them up against the Jaws scale, which ignores some elements of the actual films and sets forth a rating scale. Jaws, an all-time great classic film. Jaws 2, an enjoyable film with some flaws but worthy of multiple viewings. Jaws 3, a moderately enjoyable film. And finally, Jaws 4, a bad movie. Please join Paul and his guests as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
Famous around the world, please welcome the Fantastic Four. Mr. Fantastic. Invisible Woman. Human Torch. And the Thing.
Hey, what time is it? Say the thing.
That's not really something I say.
It's clobbering time.
That's just in the cartoon. Never late for Sunday dinner. Let's eat.
Hey, what time is it?
It's dinner time. Get inside.
I herald the beginning. I herald your end. I herald Galactus.
What is that?
Get us out of here, Ben! Hold on!
Are we safe?
I don't know.
The clock is ticking. We are going to find a solution. We are going to make it right.
You don't want to just crush him like that.
The four of us will face the danger. We will protect you.
Family, it's about connecting to something bigger than yourself. We'll face it together. As a family.
What time is it, Ben?
No.
What time is it, Ben?
No, Johnny.
Say it!
I don't wanna!
Say it!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Yours? I'm Paul Spitero, and I am here, as always, with Mr. Sean Herbie Whalen.
It is an absolute pleasure to be here today.
And we have the pleasure of having Scott Gardner.
Hello!
And Chris Keith.
Hello.
And we have the extra added pleasure. I always think it's great when we get somebody who's younger but similar-minded to us, because it gives me an idea of if I'm just liking things because I'm old. But today we have Logan Gardner with us, who is here to represent the young.
Hello.
How's everybody doing?
Excellent. How about you?
Today we are here to look at Fantastic Four First Steps. I'll tell you something. I was all excited about this movie, and then I saw Superman. And I thought Superman dropped the mic and said, you know what? How about that? And then I started getting all apprehensive. Am I going to like this? Am I going to be disappointed with this? Because, you know, for reasons independent of the movie itself, because it's just not living up to the level that I wanted to. I saw it the other night. Now, unfortunately, you know, because of the timing of things, I only got to see it the one time. But I'm going to say I really like this movie. And I think in many ways, it's almost like a new year and a new advent of good movies, because I really like Superman and now I really like this, and I feel like it's renewed my high expectations for comic book movies. So, I mean, we'll get into the details on all of this, but everybody, why don't we go around the table and just, you know, did you see it just once, more than once, and what format did you see it on? I saw it on a regular screen, unfortunately, not the IMAX, which I would have liked to have, because I think the Galactus stuff would have been really cool in IMAX. What about Sean? How about you?
So I was going away for a five-day event the next day. I had to leave at like 3 in the morning. I saw it opening night because I did not want to miss it. As far as anticipation, the trailers kind of hooked me in. As a kid, I grew up with the cartoon with Herbie. And I was always looking forward to live action Fantastic Four. We've gotten them in various forms. I've enjoyed what's come before. This one looked like it was going to be magical. And I can't wait to talk about what the actual experience was like with this one. But it was an opening nighter for me. I wanted to see it a second time. I haven't had a chance to yet. So admittedly, I want to see it a second time.
So you saw it on a regular screen?
I did. I saw it in 3D on a regular screen.
Chris, I think we went together in two different states because I think you went pretty much the same time I did.
Yeah, I saw it. It was it wasn't IMAX. It was like a XD. I guess that's what they call it at this place called Strike and Reel. It's one of these bowling / arcade / movie theaters. So we were going to go last weekend, but it just didn't happen. So yeah, we went Tuesday night, and to be honest, I was trying to avoid a lot of the trailers. And I wanted to, I don't know why, it seems like I know why, because past experience with some of these comic book movies is the trailers will come out and then you'll just have the negative backlash prior to the movie even coming out and everybody starts talking and I was like, I don't want to hear it. I'm going to go in as fresh as humanly possible. So got in, only got to see it once. I want to see it again. If it's still on the screen, I want to be able to have one more chance. There's a place right, I should have just gone there, but there's a place right less than a mile from my house that has it on IMAX, and that's where I saw Superman on that IMAX. I'm tempted to see if I can swing that maybe this weekend and go see it one more time.
All right, Scott and Logan, did you see it together both times? I think it was twice that you saw it.
No, just the once. We both want to see it again. Yeah, my boy here, Logan, he actually treated the old man to the movies, so we went to see it at the Cinemark at City Walk at Universal Orlando, which is a really nice theater. And we saw, what did they call it, 40X?
It's something like that.
Something like that.
No, the 40X is something different, I believe. It was like real XD 3D.
Yeah.
And probably one of the best looking movies I've ever, or best looking 3D experiences I've ever had.
Yeah, the 3D was fantastic because normally I have to prepare myself because I'm spoiled because I have my own 3D set up and I can tailor it to my position. So it usually looks good and you don't get a lot of ghosting. But also, this is the first one I even remarked to Logan during the movie. This is the first 3D movie that we've seen in the theater where I didn't feel like it darkened the movie, because that's one of my complaints, is that usually like you just have to accept the fact, well, it's going to be dark and there's going to be shit you can't see because it's too dark. This was perfect. Did you notice any darkening at all? No, I didn't either. No. It was great.
It was a very bright movie, except for some of the scenes with Galactus, which were darker. But otherwise, the movie itself was very bright, which I thought added to its charm.
Yeah. But, not to bury the lead, I mean, I absolutely loved it. And I went in, I'm really glad, Paul, that you mentioned the thing about Superman, because, while I wanted to see this right from, you know, when it was announced and everything, I didn't really go in with any expectations other than my biggest reason for wanting to see this movie, beyond the fact that it's the FF who I like, and it's part of the MCU, which I follow, my biggest reason to want to see this specific movie was it was another Michael Giacchino score, and by the aesthetic of the movie, I was really hoping to get Tomorrowland 2.0, you know, from the score, you know, another Tomorrowland like soundtrack, because I love that soundtrack. It's probably my favorite Giacchino score. But after Superman hit, and I love that one so much, it made me really nervous about this movie. Like, man, what if this sucks? Is it going to kind of kill some of that momentum of the superhero movie feeling like it was on the upswing again? And thank God. I mean, I don't think it did it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
So just because you brought it in, now I'm going to go right to Giacchino. You know, usually I wait for the end, but I'm going to go right into it because my thoughts on that, I was, you know, I knew we were going to do this tonight, so I was trying to pay attention to everything, and I was listening to the score a little bit. And I thought, and maybe, you know, maybe I missed something, but I thought the score was very good. It had its up moments. It had a nice flow to it. I thought it was really good, but I didn't catch any real individual themes for anyone, or, you know, even like a team theme or something like that that stood out as you know, the thing you want to hum as you're walking by. Was there anything I missed on that? I did like it. Don't get me wrong.
I don't know about individual themes because I've still been listening to it as well. I assume there's at least some sort of theme for the Silver Surfer and Galactus, because they have a track on the soundtrack called, it's like Galactus and Silver Surfer theme or something to that effect. So I think there probably are themes, because Giacchino seems to really subscribe to the John Williams school of movie soundtracks. I haven't quite figured out individual themes, if they are in there yet, but the FF theme itself is, man, it's stuck in my head. I've been listening to it over and over in my brain for days, and I love it. I can't get enough of it. I love how cheerful and upbeat it is, because my mother-in-law, of all people, pointed out to me years ago that my music is very depressing, she says. And I never really thought about it that way. But a lot of movie music is, kind of downbeat, you know. It's not always, you know, because it's usually, you know, there's dramatic things happening and that sort of thing. So it's not always light and cheerful, you know. It's not pop music. But this one's kind of the pop music of movies, you know, of superhero themes. And I love that about it. It's very optimistic sounding, which is exactly what I wanted, you know, again, Tomorrowland. And I love that. But I tell you, probably my biggest single geek out moment of the entire movie, and Logan can attest to this, is there's a montage sequence. I forget exactly what's going on, but I know part of it was like Herbie was like cleaning up or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, I heard the music playing and I was like, Logan, it's like, that's the monorail music. It's actually not. It's actually a track called Nation on Wheels from the 64 World. It's, you know, it was a piece of Walt Disney music from the fair. But those two pieces of music are easily confused, and I always have trouble keeping them straight because they sound remarkably like each other. But also, both of those pieces of music were used in like anything you watch from like the 60s. Disney shows like Disneyland or, you know, any of those specials use that music. So, you know, they kind of go hand in hand, but that was such a geek out for me that he actually was using that specific Disney music. That was really cool. It's a shame it's not on the soundtrack though.
I'm surprised it's not. Maybe it'll be a more extended soundtrack at some point.
You mentioned optimism, and I think it's something that stood out for me from this one. What we've had for a while there, and I think it's why there's this idea of superhero movie fatigue, they became very formula. They, like, we have to have certain kinds of cool moments. It has to fit into a certain box. It has to have a certain feel to it. I've enjoyed all of those. I'm not going to, you know, backpedal and say I haven't. But I think what I'm really enjoying this summer, I think Fantastic Four has nailed it too. We just saw Superman. Superman's also a very optimistic movie. It's upbeat and things like that. This did not feel like Superman. This felt like the Fantastic Four. It embraced the source material. And when I say embrace the source material, it embraced the comics, but it also embraced the cartoon. It embraced the films that have come before. It like basically took like what really has worked before and kind of worked out a lot of the things that hasn't. And I think because of that, I like that it wasn't afraid to have its own identity. musically, I think what I liked about it, I get what you're saying, Paul, there's not like those single themes, but I liked it too. And I don't know that I had that hummer that I was walking out of going, yeah, there wasn't any of that, but I liked the music. And I felt like it was something that the whole experience of this was something that I really enjoyed. And I liked when I walked out happy. I got to admit that when I was watching the trailer, and this is a summer of how you do trailers, because I said this in Superman, I'm going to say it here too. We got to see a decent amount of trailers for this. I didn't feel like I knew where this film was going to end.
Right.
And I loved that. I was walking in thinking that this movie's going to end very dark. I thought they might lose.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the reason why they'd come over and things like that. I was trying to predict that piece. And I love the fact that I walked in thinking it was going to go there because I was rooting for them, I think, in a very different level. And I like that they swerved me.
I mean, I think that was an intentional misdirection by Marvel. And I think it was a great move on their part.
Somebody needs to sit Rian Johnson down and tape his eyelids open and make him watch this movie as a lesson for how to subvert expectations successfully.
Yes.
Just before we change subjects, any more thoughts on the soundtrack slash score from Chris or Logan?
I did have one question, and Scott, you may know this, because I was thinking about right when the music started, I was like, oh my God, he's probably going to love this, the score, just knowing when you know, we've talked about this in the past on Facebook. But are they saying Fantastic Four? Or am
yes.
I just hearing it in my head? Because okay,
no,
they are.
They
okay,
do. Yeah.
Just,
yeah. There's
okay,
a
yeah,
I shared a clip. I forget where it was from. I think it might be from an official Marvel thing, but it was Giacchino conducting the orchestra. And you can see on both sides behind where he's conducting, you know, the whole orchestra is laid out. And then like on the fringes at the back of the orchestra were a chorus. And when that hits that part, yeah, they are actually, you know, chanting essentially Fantastic Four, which is one of the things I like about it. I thought that was really cool because, you know, everybody always says, you know, the best Superman themes are the ones where the music says Superman. In this one, you actually have a chorus chime in and say Fantastic Four. And that shouldn't really work, but it totally does.
I think with the vibe of the movie, of like the entire world is on their side, it almost feels like the people cheering them on.
Yeah.
Right. That's cool.
Well, it's interesting when you factor that in that to the way they subverted that in the movie. The world was rooting them on until they weren't.
Yeah. That was a little dark.
I had precious few criticisms of the movie, and I'm going to hit those early on here. And some of them aren't even really criticisms, but it was just, you know, what I just more observations even than criticisms. The first was I had some apprehension going in with Pedro Pascal being cast as Reed Richards. And while I thought he did a good job with what he was given, the problem I had with him was everybody else. When Sue was on the screen, I saw Sue, the Invisible Woman. When Johnny was on the screen, I saw the Human Torch. When Pedro Pascal was on the screen, I saw Pedro Pascal. So I couldn't totally lose myself in him in the role. And part of it is that he couldn't shave the stupid mustache. Just shave us the freaking mustache. Reed Richards either has the whole beard going, not just a little scruff like he did there, or he's got a clean-shaven look. The mustache is almost like a Pedro Pascal trademark, and it took me out of it a little bit.
I agree with you completely, except when they started getting into the sequences where Reed and Sue were having real trouble, where Sue was basically, you know, talking about the fact that I need you, I not need you not to be so obsessed, you know, this, all those type of pieces, they had some real emotional moments. They started pulling me in. I started feeling like he was Reed Richards then. And this isn't disputing you, because I agree with you. I was in that place where it's Pedro, Pedro, Pedro. Then they started having some real Reed and Sue moments in this where I was like, oh, I didn't think they'd go here, and I loved it because it felt very real. It felt very true to the comic books, you know, as far as that piece, it felt very true to the time, you know, like where they were at in their relationship and what was going on. And I liked the fact that they felt like they had a seasoned relationship, which is something I think nowadays it's one of the reasons why these movies feel so formulaic is the fact that we always feel like we got to start at the beginning. No, you can do it. Give people editor's notes like they did in this piece. And then treat people to a good story, and you're going to get really excited about it. And I felt like having them be more seasoned felt fresh because we got to have some relationship, some interesting relationship dynamics between them that I don't think you ever get to get in these comic book movies now. And I think that's where this is starting to feel like a reinvigoration of these, because I loved that this felt different. It just felt different.
I totally agree. And it's funny you mentioned that about the dynamic, because that was the one thing I loved. That's the single most important thing that I loved about Superman, was the fact that they didn't start with, she doesn't know that he's Superman. They're already dating. I mean, it's not deep into the relationship, but they're already dating. She already knows. And when he shows up at her apartment, and we're going to talk about that movie, but just the fact that that had already occurred. And when I think they were already married when the rocket went up. Before the cosmic rays. I think they were already husband and wife, which I think is great. And then it's just, okay, now we're just adding this additional element, but there's already that, and it's not the little girl pining for you know, older Reed Richards like we saw in the comics. When did they get married? Was that year three?
They got married, I think, in annual number three.
Three, so it's about 3 years into the book, and then Franklin wasn't until maybe the next year or the year after that. But just to have it like that, it was perfect because I mean it starts and I mean did it start with her with the pregnancy test?
It was pretty early on.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite things about this movie is that the entire family dynamic felt incredibly realistic and very uplifting. It wasn't like. And I don't want to compare it to the 2004 and 2005 movies, but the dynamic between the Thing and Johnny felt more like brotherly rather than like they're actually like arguing with each other. Because I can't think of a single instance where Johnny actually like insults the Thing or anything like that. Like they have little like, you know, things that they might say to each other. Like I know they make a comment about like, oh, Johnny doesn't even know English. How do you learn a whole different language? But it doesn't feel like they're bullying him or anything.
No, it feels like good-natured ribbing.
Other way, yeah, it feels good-natured. Like you know, you're teasing the other person. It felt weird. Familial.
I think it was Ultimate Fantastic Four. I think it was when Mark Miller was writing it. It's a throwaway scene where Johnny has been giving Thing a bunch of crap, and they're sitting in the park because I guess the Thing left, and he's telling him the story about how I guess he tried to commit suicide and the bullet bounced off his head or something like that. Like he couldn't do it because he's made of rock, and it's like this tender moment. They didn't have that in the movie, but there was a scene where Johnny's I think fighting the surfer, and it's hang on buddy, I'll be right there. And it was like without thinking, he just takes off to save him, and it's like I love this. This is perfect. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I didn't dislike Chris Evans, I didn't dislike Chiklis, but yeah, you're saying it completely right, Logan. They didn't feel like brothers. They just felt like a couple of guys who'd been around each other for a long time. These two felt like brothers. This really did feel like a proper family, and I'll go into it later. But I think the thing is probably my favorite iteration of Ben Grimm, period. I just loved everything about the character. It's one of the reasons why I want to see it again is just there's so many little subtleties to his character and just how he's not vindictive and angry, you know, 4 years later at Reed. How he's, you know, hey, you know, you need to keep beating yourself. You need to quit beating yourself up about this. And he's like the voice of reason. And I loved that. I thought that was perfect. It's inspired.
I like his what I would call quiet angst. Whereas the two prior, I keep forgetting there's one in the middle that I haven't watched, but you know, the two with Chris Evans as the Human Torch, you know, and Michael Chiklis as the Thing, both of those movies, I thought, you know, did a lot of the Thing, you know, and it is from the comics, you know, where the Thing's lamenting his condition and everything. I like in this one that there's a quiet angst that amongst Reed and the gang, he's kind of accepting of it, but you could notice in certain scenes, like when he's thinking about going to the temple and talking to the girl, and then he just kind of quietly turns around and walks away. There's a quiet angst there that he knows he's a freak, and you can tell it bothers him. He's putting on a brave face, you know, with the gang, and, you know, telling Reed, you know, don't, you know, stop beating yourself up, but you can tell it's still something he's got to live with, and it bothers him. And I really like that, rather than get yet another go around of, you know, look what you did to me and all that, you know, because we saw that. And I think that's one of the miracles this movie really pulls off, is both feeling faithful and feeling like this is the comic book FF, yet much like this recent Superman movie, also doing some neat new stuff and dumping a lot of the stuff that's already been done, because we've seen it, and why keep seeing it over again? And it's doing some fresh things. And, you know, Paul was, you know, talking about Pedro Pascal. I'll be honest, I'm no fan of the guy. I mean, I really like his stuff with The Mandalorian. But beyond that, yeah, I'm kind of feeling the fatigue with him. So he was going to be, you know, kind of a bit of a hurdle for me going into this. But I'll tell you where he won me over was I kept trying to get a feel for, like, how is he playing this character? Because he doesn't quite feel like comic book Reed Richards. He's yes, he's smart, but he doesn't feel confident. He doesn't feel like the leader of the team. And there's a moment where it's just he and baby Franklin, and he's talking to the baby, and basically he says something to the effect that, you know, I don't want you to be like me, because there's always been something wrong with me. And that's the moment that clicked for me, like, okay, I like this character. I see where they're going with this, is that they kind of flip the dynamic a little bit. Whereas in the comics, he's very smart, but he's very, I wouldn't say cocky, but confident. You know, he's clearly the leader. Whereas Sue, at least in the early days, was kind of the quiet, mousy one, the follower. They flipped the dynamic. She's now, you know, not necessarily the leader of the team, but she's the one with confidence, and she's very protective of her husband, but, you know, also motherly to the whole team. But I like that I got the sense of, like, she's protecting Reed. She knows he's very smart, but I think she knows he's also has a vulnerability to him that she's looking to protect. And I like that. Felt real to me. That felt like a real relationship, like a real husband and wife would be. I've known people like that. I think I might be in a relationship like that. So I liked that. That felt incredibly real to me. I really liked that.
I'll say the one scene that cemented, like, my love for the brother-in-law relationship between the Thing and Johnny was after the Thing starts growing his, like, rock beard, and he's, like, very on the fence on, like, should I keep it or should I get rid of it? And he ends up keeping it, and Johnny just has a quick moment of, like, oh, are you growing a beard? And Thing's like, yeah, I guess so. And he's like, I like it. And that was it. That was the scene, and I was like, I love that. That feels perfect.
It's very cool that a little moment like that could stick and,
yeah,
and have some weight to it.
And that this movie had a lot of moments like that.
I agree with pretty much everything that everybody's saying, including the leaving out the origin because it's already been told three times. You know, the relationship between them. And Scott, I think you're totally on the money with that being first of all, just to backtrack a little bit. I didn't think Pascal did a bad job in performing what he was given. I just thought he was so noticeably Pedro Pascal that it was hard to take him, you know, as Reed Richards. But I think that was one of the better written scenes, and I thought he executed it very, very well. So, yeah, I agree that was big.
The funny thing is that he went clean-shaven for Wonder Woman 2. And I
apparently
think
that was what inspired him to not do that anymore.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
He looked at it
he's
not going to shave it anymore.
But he looked so unique. When I watched that movie the first time, I was like, oh, that's Pedro Pascal. It's like he was almost unrecognizable. So I feel
you know, they should have just said, yeah, do what you want, Pedro, and then pull Superman from the Justice League on him and just
Henry Cavill.
CGI it out.
When we were talking about Ben Grimm, one of the things that's really struck me of this, we've seen some good, I mean, I think the previous Fantastic Four did a nice job with the Thing, you know, with his look. This was by far an example of where our technologies come and what you can do, because it looked good. It didn't look like it was like some CGI kind of thing like that. It also didn't look like a costume. It looked like he was really the thing. And it really is something like where I felt like I could open up. It's something I would dream about as a kid. You know, like, could we ever see something live action that looks like it belongs in the real world? But it's exactly true to the comic book. And I felt like he looked like this. It's one of the first times, don't get me wrong, we've seen some great stuff, but this was really solid in the special effects with regards to the thing in particular. And that's when I think in a Fantastic Four movie, you got a nail. And I thought he looked, his mannerisms, his expressions, the way he moved, carried himself, everything like that. He looked like he belonged into the world. It wasn't like when he came onto the scene, you're like, okay, now we got the thing that's taking me out of it, because it's a little bit fake looking. It did not look like that at all. I was really in awe of that.
Yeah,
I totally was also agree. Impressed with how he looked and everything.
And I was impressed with not only the look, but the way it just blended in, and it didn't feel like this is a cartoon character among live action people. It felt like he belonged.
There was one moment in the movie, I swear, and I even talked to one of my coworkers who saw the movie as well, and they noticed the exact same thing. There was one moment where I swear the like texture of his rock underneath his hat clipped through his hat.
Oh,
you could see it for just a moment. So I want to rewatch it. I wish I could remember exactly what part.
I didn't see that, but now I'm going to be looking for it in my next
video. I don't want to ruin it. It certainly didn't take me out of the movie very long. It was like, I noticed, I was like, did that just happen? And I was like, okay, whatever.
Things like that have a tendency that once you've seen them, you can't unsee them. And every time you watch it, then you see it like the stormtrooper banging his head.
Right.
So my second observation / criticism, and I'm going to give you my criticism and then I'm going to recant on it right away. So, I've been reading comics, you know, if you eliminate the time that I was reading, you know, the Sad Sack, Richie Rich, all of that stuff. When I started reading superhero comics on a regular basis, I was, I think, 10 years old. So I've been reading superhero comics on a regular basis for 50 years. And in the entire time that I've been reading comics, the Silver Surfer has been Norrin Radd. And I couldn't think of any story motivation to change that. Now, I found that bothersome because when I go to these movies, I want to see the characters that I've envisioned in my mind reading these comics for years. Now, to recant on that a little, if you didn't make the Silver Surfer Shalabel and have it be a girl, this really was quite the sausage fest outside of Sue Storm, because there just was no female presence in this movie other than her.
Well, there's that, but also if it had been Norrin, and I'm just going to say it, I think a lot of people I've talked to have been really surprised that that they didn't make Johnny gay, because that was an internet rumor that was out there that I think a lot of people believed they were going to do that. Since they didn't do that, and he ends up going for Shalabal, am I saying that right?
Yeah. Close enough.
Female Silver Surfer, that's, I mean, if she had been Norrin, would he have pursued the whole language thing? And you know what
that's
I'm talking
good
about?
Point.
Because he was hot for her.
Yeah, but I think you could justify his curiosity the other way. But again, you know, it really was a male-dominated movie. So, like, I'm willing to accept the presence of a female Silver Surfer. And it's a different reality. Maybe in the 616 reality, Norrin Radd is the Silver Surfer. So, you know, I guess we'll see what they do with the comics if they follow suit and all of a sudden change it around. But I also thought, to be honest, I thought she nailed the part. I thought she did a great job with what she was given. And that made me accept her even more.
Not only did she nail the part, I really liked it. And then when they showed the flashback, that was really good. But yeah, Space Ruth was, it really looked like she was surfing.
Space Ruth. I like that.
Yeah, I didn't get that from Lawrence Fishburne, and obviously that wasn't Fishburne with a motion capture. But the Silver Surfer in the last two, well not the last two, but the two, you know what I mean. But he was only
Rise
the one.
Silver Surfer.
But yeah, it did not look like he was really surfing. It just looked like he was on a board. There are multiple scenes with Space Ruth where it looks like she is in the middle of a, you know, whatever they call that, but it looked like something out of Magnum P.I. Like she was really surfing. I was like, oh, that's awesome. And I was skeptical going into it. I thought, to be honest, I hope she's, if they do a sequel or she's going to, I didn't see that she's supposed to be in a Doomsday or Secret War, but I would love it if she, you know, reappeared and we get a little bit, maybe not backstory. I don't know if they want to do a full Silver Surfer movie, but just a little bit more of that character, because I thought it was pretty solid. I thought it had good potential.
Action-wise, when she was in there, I loved the use of it, because it's an example of how you incorporate somebody's power set to make some unique and interesting sequences. The way she was weaving in and out of the ship, and this the sense of speed and the sense of power. You know, when Johnny caught up to her, and it was like it took him everything just to get up to touch the board. And it was almost like he was a gnat, you know, when she like slapped it away. But I just thought there was something so majestic about that. It just looked really, really smooth, which the Silver Surfer as a concept should look sleek and smooth.
Right.
In how it functions. And I really liked that it felt like it was cool to be the Silver Surfer, which isn't always portrayed, but it felt like the sense of speed was there without making it so like blurry and things like that where you can't enjoy the experience. This had that sense of speed and power, and with the right amount of balance. It just, they made some really clever choices in this, and that was another one that stood out for me visually as being striking in what they did with it.
I also liked how the story kind of maintained the key elements of the original Galactus trilogy, in that the Silver Surfer comes, the Herald of Galactus, you know, is there to just herald the doom of Earth, and eventually is won over and turns on Galactus. And they did that without having to overly focus on that particular turn. And Johnny inspired it. I thought that was all very, very well put together. This script feels to me like it was very carefully put together, and that they didn't waste any moments. And that's a big key, which is going to bring us to my third faux criticism, is I wish this had another like half an hour in it, just to give us a little bit more character development and character moments, because this was, like I said, a very, very tight script, and it moved along at a breakneck pace through a lot of it. Even though there were quiet moments, it still kind of, you know, even the quiet moments were definitely designed to move the story forward. There was, you know, there wasn't a lot of downtime. And I would have liked to have seen some downtime with these characters, because I liked these characters. And it would have been fun to see a little bit more interaction between them and a little bit more of their personalities. You know, this was, I think, mostly dominated personality-wise by Sue Richards. I think she, you know, she carried a lot of the movie. She was the key character. Then we had a decent amount of Reed. I would think the character who was played the least as far as personality was the Thing. And I think there's a lot of area to explore. I think he was great when he was on, but I think there's a lot of areas that we could explore there. And I think that, again, I would have liked another half an hour to the movie. It's not really a criticism of what we got. It's just, I wanted more, because I think we could have had more character moments with these people.
I almost think that speaks to how good the movie was,
yeah,
that you're like desperate for,
yeah,
more of it. And
yeah,
I am already ready for a sequel or,
yeah,
to see this team return somehow. And I know that,
yeah,
I'm going to, but still.
Okay. I was wondering, I haven't seen anything. I mean, I've seen all they've talked about is Avengers Doomsday and Secret War, but I haven't seen them, you know, expressly state, hey, by the way, we're going to do a sequel of the Fantastic Four, but I'm all on board for it.
I would think they might be waiting on the box office on this before they make a decision on the next one.
And if it continues going how it is, I think we're going to be okay.
My question would be, where do you go from here? You already did Galactus.
First of all, they're not done with Galactus, I don't think. but also, there's plenty of Fantastic Four things you can do. And the interesting thing is going to be to see how they get them into the main MCU universe, because we all thought we knew, and it was just a wonderful misdirection by Marvel, that they were going to somehow get thrown to the main universe in a way that, you know, either sacrificing themselves or escaping the annihilation of the Earth or somehow doing something in this movie that was going to lead us to that clip we got at the end of Thunderbolts.
Right.
And not at all. Right. You know, we don't know how they did it, how they got to that moment, and we're going to have to wait to see. I assume that Doomsday, which is, I think, due for like December of 2026, I assume that's going to show us how we're going to get there, unless there's something in between that's going to give us another step towards it. And that said, one of the things I thought that was really good is this movie, while it fits into the universe on a whole and is going to fit in, it was self-contained. You didn't need to have seen anything in Marvel in the MCU in order to watch this and enjoy it.
I think that's one of its biggest strengths.
Do you think that if you had never even heard of the Fantastic Four, that somebody would understand this movie?
I think we had enough exposition at the beginning with that little celebration of, you know, they've been around for, 4 years, and, you know, and some geek moments there, too.
God, yes. Giganto. That was the most glorious thing. I was just giddy when Giganto comes out of the ground. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You've made this actually real in the middle of a movie. That was just fantastic.
The Red Ghost and his super apes.
And the Mole Man's plot using Giganto, that was straight from he was actually stealing buildings. He stole the Pan Am building. I was like, yes! Yes! Embrace this comic goofiness. I love it. It was great.
Oh, that's right. He was called the Mole Man, not the Jeweler.
Well, and funny you mentioned the Red Ghost, because I guess there were I guess it was in the trailer, and I'm hoping I pray that they have deleted scenes, because apparently it was supposed to be Malkovich as the Red Ghost.
Yeah.
And I'm like, please, if you have any decency, he's playing it as KGB from Rounders. And talking about how he's so unsatisfied and eating his Oreos, because that would be beautiful. But I can see it.
And personally, when you get a movie like this, and when we get those scenes, I personally prefer that they give us an extended version as opposed to just having deleted scenes to see individually.
Yeah. Amen.
Right.
Can we talk a little bit about Vanessa Kirby in this one?
Absolutely.
And her portrayal of Sue Storm.
I loved her portrayal of Sue Storm.
They went to places that in the comics I have always loved with the character. They've shown her to have some immense power when there's like emotional need or something like that, where she's stepped up and done some really impressive things. And this film, through story, did it that way. And I loved every second of that. She's in labor and she's protecting her family. And I liked that they showed the strain of that. Her battle with Galactus, where it was a team battle, don't get me wrong, but she was using her powers on a level where, like, this is my kid.
Right.
She's doing this at a level where she does not know what this is going to do to her. And I absolutely loved every second of how it visually looked, that you could see the struggle. I mean, her acting in that was great. Because, you've got the visual effects and all that, but when you've got strong visual effects and you've got an actress who is portraying that and really showing you what strain really looks like, that is magic. And those moments really looked good across the board. You don't always get that. Sometimes there's an over-reliance on special effects where it kind of does all the work. And I think nowadays our expectations can and should be that if you're really talented, you understand the balance of, we need this to look good, but man, we need that acting to go along with it. We need to believe this. And I did. When she was doing that, boy, suspending disbelief, I was in the moment. And that is brilliant when you get that.
And you know, the growth of that character is so funny because, I mean, I'm a huge Fantastic Four fan, and I've read all the, I mean, Lee and Kirby, I mean, I appreciate it for what it was, but her character, and Andy and Michael have said this for years about, but Reed, what does it all mean? You know, she's just used, she's basically a housekeeper. And Scott, you mentioned it earlier that she's the maternal role, which is perfect because that's what she should be because she's protecting her family. But it was, I mean, what was it? It was Byrne when the Psycho Man had her had her go crazy. But not only that, there was, and it wasn't that great because she wore that stupid costume with a cutout four over
the
her
window.
Yeah, and but there was, I want to say it was DeFalco writing it.
Yeah.
There was a story arc where she punched a hole in a celestial. And it was like, okay, the only person I've ever seen do that was Thor, and I'm pretty sure it broke Mjolnir in half.
Yep.
And she is and was and always will be. And that's why I remember when people were talking about it saying, well, I don't know about this girl power thing. I was like, no, she's always been the most powerful member of the Fantastic Four. Just hasn't been utilized right. And because she cares so strongly about her family that she'll do anything to defend them. And I got a kick out of that whole scene with Galactus where she's pushing him back. I was like, this is fantastic. This is so fascinating. And really the only problem I had with her was she kept pronouncing that kid's name as Franklin. Duh. Like multiple times. And like,
I had not noticed that.
I'm sorry I ruined it for you, but her accent really never slipped. I thought she was great. And then just the way they positioned it was really good.
Yeah, she's English.
I guess that is a good thing.
See, what I loved was they showed her to be as, you know, possibly the most, you know, not even possibly, they showed her to be the most powerful member of the four, actually. But they also showed that to be that powerful, it took a price. You know, I was going to say it nearly killed her, but actually it killed her.
It did kill her, yeah.
So, you know, it's not like you could just take her in future movies and just have her be supremely powerful at all times, because it does take a tremendous price from her. And maybe she can't do that all the time. So she does have limits on that power, and that's important too. But that scene when she was pushing Galactus back, first of all, Sean, I totally agree with you that her portrayal showed the strain and the angst and the difficulty she had doing it. But that was like a sitting on the edge of your seat kind of thing. Even though you knew ultimately somehow they had to get him in there, you know, you're just kind of like thinking, you know, is this going to work or not? And then when they finally get her in, get Galactus in there, and then he starts to come back out again, that was awesome. Because I did not expect that at all. Once he was in, I thought he was in. And when he started coming back out and then the surfer, you know, Johnny's ready to sacrifice himself, and you knew that was never going to stick. But when the surfer then overtook him and all, just great stuff.
That was actually one of my few, maybe my only issue with the movie, is that I guess I was almost expecting it to have a darker ending. And I really thought that's where they were going. They kept mentioning the Future Foundation, like over and over. And I really, really thought that somebody was going to die and stay dead. And I thought it was going to be him.
But that's a key to make a movie good, too, is if you feel the stakes are real.
Yes.
Especially when you're dealing with, you know, an IP like this where, you know, how could they kill off one of the people? If somehow they can convince you that maybe they're going to kill off one of them, That's them doing their job tremendously.
Absolutely. It would be funny if they did it, and then the next in Avengers Doomsday has Pete as wearing the white Spider-Man costume from the Future Foundation. Because that was when they killed off Johnny for, like, what was it, 6 months? That was his selection to replace him in the four was Pete. And I'm like, okay, man.
Was that when Johnny died in the negative zone, supposedly?
Yeah, when he died with Annihilus, yeah. And then they had like a video will, and that was he basically was just telling everybody, he's like, look, there's only one person that can replace me. It's Parker. So they go get Peter Parker, and then they've got like a school. It was
the school thing that they did, I thought they overdid.
That didn't work. Yeah,
in the comics.
It lingered too long, yeah.
That was going to be my answer to Logan's question of, you know, where do they go from here? I think they need to set up the negative zone and all the villains that are in there. I mean, you know, with Annihilus, definitely, but you've also got Blastar and there's other ones too, right? There's some other ones I'm forgetting. But
I don't think there's any other major ones. But there are other villains that they dealt with.
Yeah.
Wasn't it effectively the negative zone in Quantumania?
Quantum realm.
More or less. The quantum realm.
We're
going to go ahead and go negative zone. Can we bring in Richard Rider and then just kind of saddle him with the Guardians of the Galaxy? Or is that
you could easily, if people are invested in enough, you can bring Richard Rider in because we already have introduced the Nova Corps. Nova Corps. I hate when I mispronounce that. and then just have a Nova agent come down to Earth for some reason and just do that Green Lantern thing where he gives his powers to Richard Rider like they did in Nova number one.
See, I'm surprised they haven't already gone that direction, because something that happened that really has not been followed up on is the fact that it's mentioned in the beginning of, I think it's Infinity War, that mentions that Thanos had decimated Xandar. So if he did, you would think the Corps was already down a bunch of people anyway, because of all the people that were killed trying to stop the Black, what was the name of that ship? The Black Adder or whatever the hell it was, from landing on the planet back in Guardians, that they could restructure the Nova Corps to support the whole Richard Rider thing. So I'd love to see him go that direction, but unfortunately they haven't ever followed up on any of that stuff.
And what you could have him be the Nova representative with the Guardians.
Right.
I mean, it would be pretty easy and pretty seamless to bring him in there. Yeah. And you could make it as a, you know, a small part of one of these big ensemble movies, you know, and they definitely can do that.
I mean, I love the movies. You know, all through the history of the whole MCU, I've loved the movies that have expanded the mythos. Whichever ones we've gotten that have made the world bigger, I like, you know, I've loved when they've done that. And, you know, this movie really embraced the cosmic stuff, as it should. You know, it's the FF. I mean, they're the ones that blazed that trail in the comics. So I love that this opens up so much more of the world and you know, the universe of Marvel. There's so much cool stuff. So all these naysayers that are, you know, keep saying, oh, you know, superhero movie fatigue and, oh, you know, MCU is all played out. I mean, there's tons of stuff we haven't gotten yet that, you know, that they could pull from the comics that I'm excited to see. I want to see Gladiator. I want to see, what was that team he put together that had Gladiator and Quasar and the ROM substitute? I can't remember.
Oh,
it was like all the.
I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was subsequent to Annihilation.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Because I think the Surfer was part of that
for
a second.
Yeah, it was all the like super cosmic heavy hitters were all on one team. I would love to see shit like that. So yeah, I'm hoping that's where we're headed.
Well, what I do like though is I don't know where they're headed. I mean, I know they're going to Doctor Doom, but I don't know how they're going there. And I don't know, you know, what that's going to. How that's going to play them into the main MCU. And I'm really fascinated to see how that's going to happen. And I think that's one of the places where this movie also succeeds, because it makes me want to see more and it makes me curious where they're going to go. And I don't feel like I have the answers.
Right.
You know, I have my apprehension about Robert Downey Jr. playing Dr. Doom. And I've had that from the day they announced it. Now, on the one hand, I feel like
that team was the Annihilators, by the way.
Annihilators, that's it. Thank you. Yeah,
I looked it up just because we were chatting. And like, it was going to bug me if I didn't know. Sorry.
See, what I keep saying in my head, and I don't think they're going this way, is if you saw Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, he looked nothing like Tony Stark in the MCU. So you could easily, and I think he's a good enough actor, that you could have him playing Victor Von Doom and just not, you know, just that he's playing a different part. It's the same actor, but he's playing a different part. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to somehow make it that Tony Stark is Dr. Doom, and I can't wrap my head around that.
I feel like they're going to take like a syndrome from the Incredibles route with Dr. Doom and have him try and kidnap Franklin as like, become my ward sort of thing.
Well, in the comics, Dr. Doom, while, you know, Reed is his mortal enemy and all of this stuff, has shown a soft spot for Reed's children. So,
well, other than the daughter that I think he raised,
Valeria.
Yeah.
Yeah,
God, such a stupid character.
But I think, you know, you have it makes him a more complex character, and I like that. And Dr. Doom should not be a simple character. Now, on the other hand, one of my criticisms, I didn't want to keep comparing it to the prior movies, and we really haven't, but one of my criticisms of the Tim Story Fantastic Four movies is I felt Dr. Doom was incredibly miscast because he should be an Eastern European, you know, this guy who looks down his nose at everybody else and not be a yuppie like he was in those.
You mean not an Australian plastic surgeon?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how they're going to play this out here with Robert Downey Jr., and I'm a little afraid of where that's going to go.
I do not want to hear an Eastern European accent on him. I'm good if he's just kind of doing a Cary Grant type, maybe Frasier type thing, something, you know.
Something a little haughty.
A little haughty, yes, but nothing to the level of. I know Andy Leyland just loves Dr. Doom and the boasting and all that, but if I have to hear this, I command, or Doom does this, and he starts talking to the third person, I may just leave the theater.
See, I really strongly get the feeling that we're not going to be getting classic Doom from Robert Downey Jr. I really strongly suspect what we're going to get is, I don't know if any of you guys ever read, there was an X-Men offshoot title called Exiles. Mm-hmm. It was a team, basically one of those Team of Freak books where just about every member of the team was from a different Marvel reality, like an alternate world.
Yes.
And they all came together to solve continuity problems essentially that were happening because of all the divergent realities. And I remember there was one story where they wound up on an Earth where basically Tony Stark was Dr. Doom. And I think that's what we're getting. That's just my feeling on that. I don't remember anything of the story other than I loved that entire run. I remember liking that story, but it's been so long since I read it. I can't remember the specifics of it, but if he ends up being actually even called Victor Von Doom, I will be shocked. I really don't think that's where they're headed. I think he's some sort of alternate reality Tony, you know? So
I can have enough faith in them because they've done enough to satisfy my movie going persona for these Marvel movies. There's things that I fear, and that's one of them. You know, for the most part, there's been precious few missteps as far as I'm concerned. The worst things they put out usually are just not great. You know, it's not that the worst things are bad. I, for the most part, I like almost everything. There's a couple of the TV series that I wasn't into. But for the most part, the movie-wise... like I said, even the worst movies have something for me in them.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a moment and ask you a question. Do you think that there are characters, comic book characters, that just simply cannot be translated to live action, believably?
I used to, but Starro the Conqueror was in Suicide Squad, so no.
Yeah, you know what, I think... That's a good point, Chris. I would say I used to as well, but I think that every character can be done right. That doesn't mean that every character has been done right.
Right.
But I think every character can be done right.
Because I kind of wonder if Doom might be one of those characters that it's just damn near impossible to bring him, comic book Doom, to live action and really have it work. Cause I don't, how do you play him? How do you visualize him? Cause he has a very cool comic book look that doesn't necessarily work in the real world, but also how do you play classic comic book Doom in 2020, whatever, 5, 6, 7, whatever, and not have it come off as just cornball or chewing the scenery or just way ridiculous. So, I mean, because you look at the Corman version of Doom, and say what you want about that movie, Doom in that, for the most part, was comic book Doom as he existed up to that point. Now, you know, you have to forgive, like, you know, the clicking his fingers and all that was a little bit ridiculous. But for the most part, what that actor was going for was Doom. And he looked the most like comic book Doom of the Dooms we've gotten so far. But you watch that, and it's just so cringe. And it's like, okay, so maybe we have to accept the limitations of reality, that there are certain characters that just are not going to transfer.
No, I'm not going to accept that.
Okay.
you said you want to play devil's advocate, and that's what you're doing.
Right.
I'm going to say, don't play it exactly the same way. But you know what? Look at the performance of Michael Fassbender as Magneto in X-Men First Class.
Oh, yeah.
And use that as kind of a drawing board for where you're going to go with Doom. The only thing is that Fassbender showed a little bit more vulnerability than you want Doom to show. Doom, you want to have him show the vulnerability, but not ever admit it to himself.
Right.
Doom is supremely confident at all times. But I think if you took that performance and you tweaked it a little bit with the script to kind of play it the way I want to, I you know what? I would have liked to see Michael Fassbender playing Doom, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Yeah.
But that's a performance that I think is comparable to what I'd be looking for from somebody playing Doom.
Yeah. I was trying to think of who do I know that I would like to see play Doom, and I really don't know. I mean, if he was, you know, 30, 40 years younger, I would say somebody like Frank Langella, I think, would be great. But, you know,
he's got to be like in his 90s. Now.
Yeah. But yes, you know, somebody with that kind of gravitas and presence and everything.
I don't know.
See, the more I think about Fassbender in the role, the more I kind of like it, because he was playing an Eastern European character in Magneto without overdoing the accent or anything like that.
Right.
And like I said, I think that performance is almost a blueprint for the way you do Doom, just a little bit more arrogant.
I don't know a whole lot about Doom, but I think my personal favorite version, and potentially the closest to live-action version you might have, is from Ultimate Alliance, like the first one anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I did like that.
Because he was powerful in that one.
Yeah, it was a video game, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I love that video game. I'm trying to remember Doom on it.
Yeah,
I play that game.
Yeah, he was in a lot of the cut scenes, and yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that was pretty close to live action, and he was very well done in that. That's true.
That I can't comment on. I've never played that.
Well, you know, in thinking about Doom, I mean, if he's going to be, I mean, and there's no way they're going to do Secret War, though I think I did post on Facebook that if they're going to do Secret War, I need to see the Secret Wars 2 Beyonder with the white suit and the perm. But realistically, the only person that has ever taken out Galactus single-handedly was Doom in like the first Secret Wars. I think it was like issue 10, and it's like, okay, he gets completely destroyed, ripped apart, and his body, he had some sort of like Trojan horse weapon as his body's being ripped apart by Galactus, and then that worked, and then he's like, okay, no, it wasn't Galactus, it was the Beyonder, and then he took the Beyonder's power,
right?
But yeah, to be that powerful, it's like, yeah, okay, I'm skeptical. I can certainly see Downey do it. I mean, he's been nominated for 2, 1, 1. So the man is, you know, clearly capable. And if he's not going to play it, I don't need him to play, you know, smart ass Tony Stark. I mean, do something different with it. I'm just hoping that, you know, I'm assuming the reason why they cast him is because they want everybody in the 616 to see him and go, Tony, and they're on their heels. And then he's the one who's going to be. I'm curious to see what this. I'm really curious to see what this script looks like for Doomsday and for Secret War.
See, now, my mind goes to the comic books, and I think it was Fantastic Four 55, maybe, maybe 65, somewhere in that range, where the issue was actually titled Doomsday, and it was when he stole the powers of the Silver Surfer.
Right.
And yeah. I wonder if that might give us a clue as to where they're going with Doomsday.
That would be interesting. I mean, I'm curious if he's... Well, and the thing about it is, though, we don't even know where Franklin's powers, other than he brought his mom back to life, and he apparently reads at a high school reading level at 4 at the end of the movie. But we don't know how they're going to do Franklin. I mean, they mentioned Power Cosmic, so it's like, is Doom going to take Franklin's power?
That's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah, based on spoilers ahead. Based on that, you know, that first tag scene that we got, that they might be going the route that Paul's talking, but instead of Doom stealing the Surfer's powers, he's going to try to steal Franklin's powers.
Could very well could be. I don't know, and you know, honestly, I like the fact that I don't know.
There is.
What did you think? Oh, I'm sorry, about the what did you think about the rest of the casting in the movie? You know, Johnny Storm and the. I mean, the thing was more of a voice actor than a physical actor because of the CGI. But you know, what did you think of those actors in the roles? I thought they were both very well suited. I thought I liked the choice of having the thing have kind of a normal voice instead of going for the scratchy voice that I think would have been the easy way to go. So it surprised me because if I were making the movie, I would have chosen to have him have the gravelly, deep voice. And they didn't do that, and I thought it worked. And I also liked Johnny in the role as well, so I just figured I'd join them together and kind of get your thoughts on
him. I think you had said, like, after we went to see it, that you were almost disappointed. Like, at first you were disappointed that you knew the thing wasn't going to have that deep gravelly voice, but by the end of it, you're like, I don't care. It didn't change my perspective on the character one bit.
No, I came to really like him. It wasn't so much the deep gravelly voice. I really liked what Michael Chiklis did with the character and his voice, but it wasn't even so much that I was, you know, disappointed or thought I was going to be disappointed by that. It's just, I'm always a little bit frustrated when it doesn't feel like the movie people do their due diligence in the homework. And I swear that it's out there somewhere that somebody had asked Stan at least once, what does the thing sound like? And he said that he sounded like Jimmy Durante. And so I was kind of surprised that, okay, he's got a normal voice. They're not going for, you know, the rocky voice or, you know, the gravelly voice, but he also didn't have Ben Grimm's normal speech pattern, I didn't think. You know, because he, you know, Ben has a very specific way that he speaks in the comics, you know, based on, I guess, from being, you know, a kid from, you know, from New York City type of thing. So I felt like that was not there. But as I say, I mean, by the time I walked out of the movie, I mean, I was totally sold on everybody. I liked all of the characters. And I really liked Johnny a lot more than I thought I was going to, because that kid annoyed the shit out of me on Stranger Things. So when he got cast, I thought, that guy? But he was great. He was really, really good.
They made everyone feel smart, because that was one of my issues, like, looking back in retrospect. Like, I grew up with the 2004 and 5 Fantastic Four movies, but in retrospect, I'm like, why did Johnny get to go to space?
Right.
He's like a dirt bike racer or something. How did he end up there? But this movie does a very good job of, obviously, Reed and Sue, but especially Johnny, like, even making Johnny feel smart in their own way and feeling like they deserve to be an astronaut sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
I think one of the things that I really liked about this is, and don't get me wrong, I love the thing. But it seems like in some of the other movies, because of the fact that they've invested so much in the thing, that the movie almost becomes the thing and his friends.
Right.
And I really liked with this one, I think it was mentioned multiple times about the fact that this felt like a family. And I think the moments where the thing enters in, like when Sue's in labor and Reed's, you know, trying to help her, you see Ben. Ben has got, you know, Herbie flying the ship. He is trying to, he knows that help is needed here in order to deliver the baby, and he's over there helping out. A role that you're not normally thinking of Ben Grimm for, but this is part of the family. He's taking on that role. Johnny, I thought they nailed with the character, and I talk so much about the Thing's visual presence. Johnny looked great in this, and I love the fact that they played with what the comics often does, with the fact that air and, you know, taking away air, and like when he got close to space, you know, he's flaming off without his choice, you know, and things like that. I like that we got to see his powers interact with the environment and have some weaknesses because of where he happens to be, that Reed has to give him a space suit that will allow him a certain amount of time to be able to act. I thought that was stuff I'm like, oh, you're really pulling in some cool stuff with the comics.
Right.
Logan, you asked a question earlier if you needed like a real background for this one. I went with my wife, who knows nothing about the Fantastic Four. Nothing. She loved this.
Good. I am glad to hear that.
She wasn't asking me a ton of questions afterwards, like about lore or anything like that. It was just an enjoyable, like she enjoyed the movie and didn't ask me, other than said, this was fun. And it was like left to that. I mean, and I think that they did a really good job of, I think, giving you everything that you need, while at the same time having a ton of geeky moments for those of us that have a history, whatever your history is with it, that you could attach on to. Because I think there's sometimes a point where you beat people too much over the head with homework. And I felt like this film didn't need a lot of homework for this
No.
one.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I've never seen Stranger Things first season, so that kid may have been on there, but I don't remember.
No,
I think he was second season.
Yeah. Only thing I've seen that Johnny Storm, I think, was that Suck Gladiator sequel that I don't know why I wasted 2 hours of my life watching. But no, I liked that actor a lot. I liked the character. I even made the comment afterwards. It's like, he's an idiot, but he's not an idiot. I mean, the guy is like full on John Nash. Translating code, you know, figuring out the language just because he's listening to the records, and it was fascinating. And he's in character, but it's not just a one dimensional. I mean, that was the one thing I always thought was silly about, you know, Fantastic Four growing up. It's like, okay, you're going to go into space, and I get it. You're going to bring this astronaut with you, but then you're going to bring your girlfriend, and you're going to bring her teenage brother. Okay, yeah, let's go steal a rocket ship. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my entire life. at least this way they did it, yeah. He looks accomplished. He looks like, I mean, he's certainly brave. I mean, he's ready to sacrifice his life for Franklin without even thinking about it. He's chasing up into space after somebody who's going roughly the speed of light. I mean, it's really I thought it was a really great character, and I mean, like I said, the only thing I'd seen that guy in up to this point was that Gladiator movie. I really liked him, and it was funny. I was going to mention one thing about the actor that played Ben Grimm is when they show the flashbacks, everybody else doesn't look like an astronaut. Everybody else looks like they're putting on an astronaut suit, but I can't remember the actor's name who plays Ben Grimm. He looked like a 1960s astronaut. He had the haircut. He had the mannerisms. If you've ever seen those videos of like Neil and Buzz Michael Collins, they are so boring. I mean, it's just these guys with not crew cuts, but you know, close cut hair, and they're putting on their uniforms, and it looked vintage. It looked like, okay, yeah, these guys are going into space. Looks like a true astronaut. He looked like the lead from that show For All Mankind, the one on Apple TV, which
I love that.
Hopefully,
show.
The next season will start back up. That's a great show.
Where Johnny, I think, really worked too is he was smart. Yes. It shows that you can show progression of characters, show the fact that he's competent without – I didn't feel like he was smarter than Reed, didn't need to feel he was smarter than Reed. I felt that he had an interest that we were seeing there. Like, you know, the sound and the records and things like that, those were something that were an interest of his, that was something that he was bringing to the table that was unique. I liked that when Sue was asking him, I believe it was Sue that was asking him if he wanted to involve Reed in what he was doing. He was basically saying, I got this, you know, and I liked that was something that it felt like, you know, he was at that point where he needed to do that. And it felt natural because that would be true in reality of a family, right? It's, mm-hmm. we don't always need to go get Reed. I can do this. But it wasn't the frustrated. It was conversational. And that part really worked for me. Because I think sometimes you go too far in that end, too, where everybody's got to have a conflict about this. This wasn't about that. It was, I've got this because this is my interest. And I felt like we knew that as a viewer because of the way it was portrayed. And I thought that was fresh. Because it always seems like when you do that, there's some conflict that leads to that. And I like that there wasn't. I like that some of this stuff just happened organically. And it was, I think it was more interesting because of it.
What did you think of the special effect choice of being able to actually see Johnny through the flames?
Loved it.
Mm-hmm. I
absolutely loved it.
I remember in the comics around issue in the 120s, I think John Buscema was drawing it, and he made the choice of doing that, where you'd actually see like Johnny's hair in the flames and different things, like, you know, in a way that they didn't normally portray him. And I always found that to be fascinating. So I kind of liked that they did that here. I think it's a good choice, honestly. Another just a minor thing, but I'm just curious. Natasha Leone, however you want to pronounce it. I've recently seen her. We watched the series Poker Face that she stars in. And I was unfamiliar with her before that. She's not playing Alicia Masters, clearly. What did you think of her inclusion here?
I liked her. I wonder. It made me wonder if she was a more recent character in the comics that I just wasn't familiar with or something.
I was thinking the same thing about her and that, like the director, like the PR director, I think her name was Lynn or something, the lady for the Future Foundation, because I haven't read Fantastic Four in 10 years. So I don't know. I know they didn't even really mention up until probably the early 2000s that Ben was Jewish. I mean, he went to a temple, or it was something about a golem or something like that. But it was never expressly stated that he was, you know, was Jewish. And it was like, well, I mean, it makes sense. Jack Kirby and Stan. But as far as not having her play Alicia, I was afraid she was going to be Alicia. And frankly, I think we can do without Alicia Masters. I mean, I'll take her or leave her. I liked the character to a degree at a certain point. And then when she went and married Johnny, I thought that was just ridiculous. And then when she was revealed that wasn't really her, and that was, what was her, Lijah, the Skrull?
Lijah. Mm-hmm.
Lyra, you know, whatever it was, back in the 80s or the early 90s, which I thought was just stupid. And then they brought her back.
Yeah, I love
she's trying to let's bring her back and have her, you know, re-engage with Ben. I'm like, no, this is just silly. So having a completely different character, I liked it. I'm kind of curious to see where it's going to go. Hopefully, you know, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of room for those quiet moments that, Paul, you were talking about, that they can do in the sequels where they have that, where maybe he's just, you know, they're just sitting. I mean, it doesn't have to be action-packed. They're just sitting there talking. And that, I think, could build a character tremendously.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to where they might be going with this character only because we know that they're destined to leave this particular world or this particular universe and come to the universe that we are more familiar with. And I'm just wondering if somehow she's coming along or if he's going to meet her alternate version from the 66 or what, you know, I don't even know where it's going, but I thought it was interesting. I heard somebody say that he thought she might be ultimately Nova, you know, which was Frankie Ray in the comics. But that, you know, she would step up and become the new Herald to Galactus if Galactus came back somehow.
I just thought of something. We've been thinking about this thing with the spaceship that, you know, that the Thunderbolts see at the end of their movie and wondering what the deal is with that and everything. Well, one of the Easter eggs I was thrilled to catch in the theater while we were watching it, because I pointed it out to Logan, is the space agency that they're using, that they utilized when they went up on their mission that gave them their powers was ANSA. Instead of NASA, they use ANSA. So what if that ship from the Thunderbolts ends up landing and three apes get out of it. I think that would be awesome. Let's tie it all together.
Yeah, I think you might not see that.
But did you catch that, though, that the space
I, you know what, that was one of the very, very few spoilers I had for this movie was when you posted that, and not really spoiler reality. No, but that was not a spoiler because it didn't spoil any of the plot, and I have to be honest, I probably would not have noticed if you hadn't pointed it out.
I thought that was really that was a
good I think idea. It's cool, but I do not think it's going to tie awesome. Into Planet of the Apes. So the I didn't see them in it, but I'm just looking on the Wikipedia page, and they do mention that the four actors from the 1994 Corman film did appear.
Yeah.
I saw Johnny. He was there was a rescue or something like that early in the movie. It was a montage scene, I think, with Reed and the Super Apes. And you see a guy, and it was like, that was Johnny Storm from that one. And apparently, I think Reed and Sue were both reporters, but I didn't mm-hmm. recognize him. I'm going to have to go back and watch it again just to specifically look for him.
And just as a notation also, at the mid-credits scene, according to the Wikipedia page, they did say that was actually Robert Downey Jr. in the in the scene, although you never see his face or anything. Anything more to add before we rate this?
Did we talk about the setting?
Not really, no.
You know, and I think, yeah, that's worth mentioning, just the beautiful connection of retro 60s with futuristic designs. I just think it was phenomenal. It just made it gave it what's ultimately going to be a timeless feel, I think.
I geeked out at that. I mean, I want a fantastic car. I love the use of Herbie in this, but the actual, like, I want to go there.
Like, yeah.
The buildings, the atmosphere, the mood. I loved so much that it had, like, the right amount of 60s pulpy feel, but yet felt like futuristic, modern kind of. I liked that it was his own thing. And it's an example of, too, like, how do you differentiate these movies? Embrace them. This just, it went all in on that, and I think it worked so well. The show host and everything like that, you know, as far as, you know, framing everything up, they embraced the setting as being not just a set piece, it was the world. And the world reacted to the set piece, which I think was the brilliant part of it. It wasn't just some gimmick. It was the whole story was revolving around it.
I like the retro yet futuristic. It totally reminded me, and I just thought of it just now, it reminds me of the old Superman animated series. Remember how it looked like the 1940s, but they had computers, and or even Batman had the blimps and 1940s cars, but of course Batman had the decel lines and stuff like that. But I loved that. And the Fantastic Car, did anybody else see Mr. Incredible?
Yeah,
it was great. And it had the little chrome Fantasticar on the side of it, which I thought was just golden. I loved it.
I couldn't help but wonder if it was an intentional nod to The Incredibles, seeing as how up to this point, The Incredibles has been the best Fantastic Four movie that we've gotten. So I couldn't help but wonder if that was intentional, that they were, you know, acknowledging that.
I hope so.
But no, the aesthetic of this movie was probably the thing beyond the score that I liked the most, because, I mean, anybody that knows me knows I'm a 64, 65 New York World's Fair nut. So the fact that this movie looks like the fair spilled out of Flushing into the entire world, I loved that. You know, when Johnny saves the monorail. And the monorail is an actual hanging monorail like they had at the World's Fair. I was like, yes! I mean, I love stuff like that. So, yeah, it was great. I love the aesthetic. There were so many buildings all around this version of New York that looked like the towers of the New York Pavilion that are still standing today at Flushing Meadows. You know, the ones from Men in Black. That's what everybody knows them from. You know, those type of towers were all over and other similar buildings that looked like pavilions that had been at the World's Fair. I loved that aesthetic. And just, you know, the retro futurism. I'm always a sucker for that stuff. So they had, you know, technology that would have been advanced for the 60s that fit within that kind of envisioning the future of, you know, that time. I'm trying to think of like specific things, you know, like they had like video phone type stuff that looked like it would fit in that time period, as opposed to, you know, we're talking, you know, all talking to each other through, you know, this technology. So we kind of accept that today, but back then that was, you know, that was futuristic stuff. So I liked that it was, you know, it had that retro futurism feel to it. They, I think they really nailed the aesthetic. The aesthetic was one of my favorite things about the movie.
I think like keeping it set within the 60s was probably the smartest thematic choice they could have made. Like,
and it let them have their cake and eat it too. That, you know, Fantastic Four was around in the 60s, but not part of this universe, so that there wasn't, you know, they didn't have to do any retconning. So I thought that was perfect.
Did they ever state a year? Because I'm wondering.
I don't think so.
I didn't think so either. Because
it was just the 60s feel.
Right. So that's what I'm wondering is, you know, what year is it in their reality? Is it 1964 or is it modern day, but just in their reality, modern day feels like the 60s? Because I'm wondering if we'll get some fun culture clash moments with Reed and the gang interacting with, you know, the 616 Earth and going, wow, because it's so different, you know. If it is, if they are present day and the 616 universe is our present day, I mean, that's going to be some fun stuff for them to play off of.
Definitely.
I hope that's not the case in one particular instance, because that would mean that that world, they didn't actually get into space until 2021 or 2022. And it's like, wow, you guys are Alan Shepard about 60 years too late.
But the problem with them being in the 60s, though, is that, all right, granted, it's an alternate universe and everything, but so if they're in the 60s, in their universe, when they come over, are they coming over from the 60s or are they coming over from the 2025 version of their universe, meaning that they're going to be 70 years older?
Well, it could be that they come through some sort of a time and space warp and they land in 2025. It's easy enough to explain away.
That's one of the things I thought they were going, you know, you talk about subverting expectations. When they were doing all their maneuvers and slingshotting around the sun and all that stuff, that's where I thought the Thunderbolts moment was going to work in, is that they were going to actually skip through realities, you know, briefly and maybe be spotted by the Thunderbolts doing that. And that didn't happen either. But yeah, there were a lot of things like that. Because you and I kept, you know, Logan and I through the whole movie, once we got to a certain point and realized that it was going, we weren't sure where it was going and what the conclusion, we were both banding, you know, back and forth different ideas, like, oh, I think they're going to do this. And then they didn't do it. Oh, we think we're going to do that. And they didn't do it. So that was fun, you know, of it doing its own thing and really not going in any direction that we expected it was going to go.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. So, I guess we're at the point where I'm going to say, I'm feeling as if I'm going to repeat the speech I did at the end of our Superman review, that I want to give this a Jaws rating. I feel very, very geeked out about it, and I really, really enjoyed it. And maybe over time, those feelings will coalesce, and I'll actually believe that it's a Jaws movie, or maybe I'm going to settle down a little bit, and I'm going to think not quite as much. But I think I'm going to land for now on a solid, absolutely solid Jaws 2 for it. It gave me everything I wanted. It is absolutely rewatchable. I'm so looking forward to seeing this again. There were so many things in there where it did not fit the formulaic superhero movie, you know, mold. So that it gave me something different and yet still totally to geek out about. So I'm very, very high on it, but I'm going to give it a Jaws 2.
I'm going to sound like a broken record on the Superman one, but this is a Jaws for me. And there's some real reasons why this is a Jaws for me. The swerve I talked about with where I thought they were going to go with this. I love when a film does that. I can't wait to see it again. I loved everything about this film. The setting, the characters, the portrayals. Is it perfect? I don't think there's a Jaws movie that's perfect and flawless. There's things in here, sure. But the things that I feel are nitpicky things, when you look at the overall package of this, everything about it was just fun. When I think of a rewatchable superhero movie, that one that I want to go back to again, we've seen some good attempts at Fantastic Four before. This is a great Fantastic Four movie. And that's where, for me, it winds up being a Jaws. If I was to say to somebody, you want to see a really good superhero movie? Go see Fantastic Four. This is one that I would give to somebody and say, if you've never liked superhero films before, why don't you give this one a shot? I think maybe you'll understand a little bit more why people like superhero movies. And that, to me, is what bumps it for me into the Jaws category, is I would, without hesitation, tell somebody to see this. Where some of the other movies, I like the breadth of superhero films that are out there, but there's, as we all know, there's a lot of them that I would not introduce somebody who's a non-fan into, because it might turn them off from the genre. This would not.
Scott, Logan, you guys want to go or me?
You're next.
I'm trying to find something I don't like about this movie. The first Fantastic Four comic book I ever bought, I think, was when Jean Grey showed up at the bottom of Jamaica Bay. And it was a crossover with, I believe, Avengers.
Yeah.
Because I was reading Avengers at the time, and I was like, why are the Fantastic Four wearing these black and white costumes? What's going on? And why is, you know, what? I'd heard of them. I'd seen the cartoon. This is family done right. This is... I really enjoyed the two from 2004, 2005, the one with Chris Evans, Jessica Alba, and the guy that I can't pronounce his name, and Evans, and Chicklin.
Ian Grofeld.
But, and thank you. I liked him. I never felt they were family, mainly because I thought Jessica Alba can't act. I thought that Sue... She's going into labor, and Reed has her turning the ship invisible so they can avoid the Surfer and Galactus. And she's complying, and she's going through labor and struggling through all that. And then it was just been there for her. By the way, naming that ship the Excelsior was I pretty much teared up when I heard that. It was a great tribute to Stan. Seeing Galactus walk on Manhattan Island alone was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my entire life. Giganto coming out of the sewer. I'm like, this is ridiculous. This is what I've always wanted. I wanted those two movies back in the early 2000s to be this. And I think this was. I'm struggling. I want to say Jaws 2, because the next one I think will be Jaws, but that's realistically never the case. I'm trying to find a problem I have with this movie, and I can't. Sean, I probably agree with you. I think it may just be one that I need to see about three or four more times, and I may dial down my enthusiasm. But for right now, I think it's Jaws. I think it was such a stellar experience walking out of that theater, going, I finally saw what I've always wanted to see. This is something that I was like, I don't want to see a cloud of Galactus. I want to see a 100-foot-tall man walking right next to a building. That's what I want to see. I want to see him knocking buildings down. I want to see Sue standing there and pushing this guy back till she dies from it. I want to know what happens next. I mean, when those end credits came and you see the mid-credit scene, it's like, okay, that looks fantastic. And then that last one was kind of pissed me off, but really just kind of threw me a cartoon. But it was such a thrill. It was such a great ride that it made me feel like I was in Lone Star Comics in 1985, buying a copy of the Fantastic Four, the first one that I ever bought, going, I don't know a lot about this other than the cartoon, but I want to know more. And after that, I want to see the next story. I want to see what happens next. I want to see how they get to the 616. I want to see if do they stay. Is there a Stargate where they go back and forth, a wormhole that they go back and forth? You know, are we going to see the Council of Reeds? Is, are we going to see the characters from that those last two movies? Are we going to see John Krasinski again as Reed? You know, all these little things. Are we going to see Norrin meet Shalabal? And it looks exactly like his girlfriend, and they have no connection at all because that's completely different reality. These are things that are just it's exciting. I felt super excited when I walked out of Superman, and I felt super excited. I want to go see this again. Like I said, I don't think I'll see it this weekend, but I want to, and it will be one that I'm going to purchase because I think I'll watch it again and again just because it was such. I'm a sucker for a period piece, and this one might as well be Mad Men with superpowers, and well, without a lot of the sexual innuendo, but having a period piece with this team was a thrill for me. So I think Jaws.
Oh, is it my turn?
Let's go. It's Gardner time.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm going to echo Paul on this, much like with our Superman review. I don't want to – I mean, I loved the movie. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love this. I have one complaint with the movie, and that was Ben growing the beard. I thought that was so stupid. I really didn't. I don't know if that's later continuity in the comics from when I was reading FF, but I specifically remember a story. I think it was in a Marvel fanfare where Johnny pranked him with fake stubble. And so I was like, where does this, like him growing a beard, where does that come from? And it's just, I don't know. I just thought it was really dumb. But other than that, I literally cannot think of a single complaint with the movie. I mean, I really, really enjoyed this far beyond my expectations walking into the movie. I love that it leaned right into its comic book roots and did very comic booky things. I love the aesthetic. I love the soundtrack. I thought all the principal actors were fantastic. I really, really enjoyed this. However, you know, erring on the side of, you know, new car smell, I'm going to give it a solid Jaws 2, you know, with the caveat. I can't wait to see this again. It probably is going to end up being a Jaws for me. But I'm just, you know, because it's brand spanking new and I've only just seen it the one time, I'm just going to err on the side of caution and say a very, very solid Jaws 2.
I would say my nitpicks with the movie are definitely nitpicks. Ones that didn't really like ruin my experience. The one being, you know, the graphical glitch with the thing's hat. The other is that I swear that baby was not real most of the time. It did not look real sometimes, and it kind of pulled me out a little bit. But my actual nitpick is that, like, I almost expected the ending to be darker, and I think maybe that ruined, or not ruined, but like lessened the ending for me. I expected someone to die, or they're trying to get Galactus into the portal, and somehow the roles get switched, and the Four gets sucked in, and, you know, now that's how they get to the new universe, or something like that. I expected almost something darker, but like everything pays off, everything seemingly for now works out for them. And I was almost, dare I say, disappointed by that. That being said, I am also incredibly excited to see it again. Knowing how it ends, I think it'll change my opinion on the ending, and I'll probably enjoy it even more the second time.
Do you remember, you have better memory than I do. Do you remember, there was a moment I can remember us both leaning over to each other and being like, oh, this is what they're going to, do you remember what it was that we were really like positive? We finally figured out where they were going and what was going to happen. And then it didn't happen.
I think maybe when they were building the portals or like the, you know, the network around the world thing. I forget what they called it.
Oh, it was Counter Earth. That was it. As I thought that they actually were going to successfully transport the Earth to the 616 universe, and it would become. Isn't it Counter Earth that's supposed to be in the opposite?
I had that same thought. They've already done Counter Earth in Guardians 3.
Right, right. But,
oh yeah.
But is that one like the comic book one? Is it in the opposite orbit of the actual Earth?
I believe so.
I think it was, yes.
It was? Oh, okay. I've seen that movie two or three times now. You'd think I'd remember that, but I didn't. I remember them calling it Counter-Earth, but I couldn't remember if it was actually supposed to be, you know, in the same solar system.
I think it was, but I can't even give you that as a definite at this point. So, you know, whatever. It was Counter-Earth. We'll just leave it at that. So that's our review of Fantastic Four First Steps.
Did you give your rating?
I did not.
You didn't. You started, but you didn't finish it because we interrupted you. Well, sorry. Next one, you can give your review.
I would personally say that despite the ending for me and despite my tiny nitpicks with it, I would actually say it's Jaws to me. This might be. It definitely is my favorite Fantastic Four film. Might even be one of my favorite MCU films. Like, definitely at least a tier MCU movie. I can't wait to watch it again. I'm excited to see where they go with it. I loved it.
Yeah. All right. So now, having redisposed of the review, that'll do it for our Fantastic Four review. Thank you, everybody, for coming on and joining us. Next time we get this crew together, I expect it to be for the Tim Story 2005 Fantastic Four movie that we haven't gotten to yet. And we'll see what we think of that, especially with having the hindsight of having seen this one. But until then, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Could you take us through how you defeated Galactus?
We didn't.
Not yet. Not yet, we didn't.
We attempted to negotiate, but Galactus... he asked too high a price.
What did he want?
What did he ask?
He asked for our child.
Just answer this!
Are we safe?
Are we safe? I don't know.